All right. What made you decide to move to Panama?
Well, like I said, after talking with Ray and the economic situation in his neck of the woods, as I'll refer to it, was difficult. And very anthropologically, there's a battle that I'm not prepared to fight anymore. There are things that men do and the things that women do. Mm-hmm. One of the things that men do is to hunt and take care of, and I'm not going to fight that anymore. So he needs to be able to do that. So that's why we started talking about maybe me taking residence in a different country. Mm-hmm. And I applied, before I applied to Spain, and Spain did not respond. I went to a store because I had to do art, try and do some artwork. I went to the store to buy something, art store, to buy something, and I handed the amount, $3.24, and so I handed the young woman $3 and a quarter, and just as she was about to put it into the till, she said, "Oh, this is not a U.S. quarter," and so we figured it was a Panamanian quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How did a Panamanian quarter get into my possession as I am in the process of trying to decide what I'm going to do here? So I felt like it was a message from the gods. It was a clear message. And my friend Peggy, who's here, she had done some research about that. So Panama is a solution. It's halfway between both sets of families. I can get home, back to the U.S. when I need to. I can get to Ray when I need to. So that's how I... And Panama's doing a lot, you know, to attract people. So that's how I chose Panama.
Okay. What did you know about Panama before your first visit?
The canal.
Okay, well, tell us about your first visit. What was it like?
I didn't visit. I moved.
You just moved?
Mm-hmm. I packed up everything I could pack up, closed my private practice, and I moved down here. I arrived January 14th of last year. I did not visit Panama.
Wow. Okay. So what image is stuck in your mind upon first arriving?
It was at night. The humidity. The humidity. I thought, ooh, this is nice. Humidity, felt really nice and lubricated.
Mm-hmm. How would you characterize your experience here overall thus far?
Positive. Mm-hmm. Panama is home. I do triangle, Ray, Panama, the U.S. I don't intend to go back to the U.S. until January. I don't think I miss it.
Mm-hmm.
I know I don't miss it. I mean, the U.S. for me is friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy here. I need to do two things. I need to make more friends, so I'm happy to be participating in the walk. I hope I will continue to have connection. And I need to volunteer and do something. I have too much time on my hands, so I need to find something to do. Otherwise, I have a wonderful apartment within a manageable price for me. One of my hobbies or passions I have, I don't know when it developed, is I love home decorating. I love space. I love working with space. It can be inside space or outside space. So I'm having fun. As a matter of fact, I'm a little curious about myself. I sort of wonder, are you moving around just so you can find new houses to decorate? Because this is getting kind of, I'm beginning to suspect my motivation. Yeah. So I have a wonderful apartment. I don't have a car, which is okay. I get to walk more. Yeah, I'm fine with that, except for those things. I would like to have more friends, and I need to find something to do.
What are your favorite things about being here?
I like the climate. I don't mind the climate. Like I said, I like having access. That's a big piece. The other piece is Panamanians are friendly. I'm always amazed, if you're in an elevator in the United States, people go into a trance to keep from acknowledging you in the elevator. Here an elevator opens, people step in it. Buenas. Buenos días. And I'm like, I really like that. I have not had any bad experiences.
Okay.
Here in Panama. No bad experiences.
Is there anything that you don't like?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm put off by the driving, although I decided not to be intimidated by that. But it's not really for that. Yes, you have your life in your hands, even if you're a pedestrian.
Yes.
What I am put off by, let's say maybe maybe that might be three major things. Traffic is not that important. The most major things for me is a lack of culture here. There's not, I'm used to having much more access to culture. I like theater, I like dance, I like drama, I like movies, I like all of that, and there isn't enough of that here.
Yes.
And so, That's really a desert. And I think that ties in with something else that I don't like about Panama, and that is that their compulsory education is only to the sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is an insidious way, of keeping the class business
mm-hmm.
going, keeping people barefoot and pregnant, not exposed. So as a result, culture is not maybe a big piece.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is the maid culture. And the best I can make of it, Panama does not, they talk about class. They talk, which in the United States, we don't talk very much about class. But I think everything is class here mm-hmm. in Panama. But the best that I can make of it, there's not an acknowledgement that class very heavily intersects with race.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, maybe they are willing to talk about it, but I don't have access to that. And I didn't grow up in a maid culture.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I don't like that. And the other thing I would just state is I am concerned about what Panamanians are doing to themselves, and that is selling their property.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to be disinherited mm-hmm. from their property, and that concerns me.
How would you compare your life here to your life in the U.S. in general?
I think I've had a good life in the U.S. I think what's lacking here, like I said, is friendships. And friendships that go back for a long period of time. But it's cheaper to live here. But again, in terms of it being cheaper to live here, I also don't want to create a lot of envy because
mm-hmm.
I have a little bit more money.
Mm-hmm.
I can live differently. Mm-hmm. I know some Panamanians are living on $1 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How would you compare your experience as a person or of primarily African descent here to your experience in the U.S.?
I feel like I blend in.
Okay.
I feel like there are other people who look like me.
Mm-hmm.
Get on the bus. They look at me strangely. They might look at me strangely if I wear my Panama hat.
Mm-hmm.
The women, you know,
mm-hmm.
don't wear. You know, how does the sun is? And we put a lot of stuff on there, cover up their heads. And I ride the bus. I don't take taxis.
Mm-hmm.
I hop the bus with the rest of the poor people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people say, I don't like the bus, don't like the bus. I'm like, well, what happens on the bus? As far as I can make it, nothing happens on the bus. It's just that the poor people, you know, they're school buses.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, you know, it's a little tight. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get out if you're carrying a package. But otherwise, it's just poor people riding the bus. I remember the first time I started to ride the bus, I got lost. I got almost began to panic. And I said, Kinga San Fernando, don't think it's Kinga San Fernando. Everybody on the bus helped me to get where I needed to go. So I don't feel like I have not had any negative experiences here.
Mm-hmm. Do Panamanians you encounter mention or recognize you as a U.S. American?
I guess so. Because I'm not real fluent in my accent. I mean, you know, as long as I keep my mouth shut in Panama as well as in Cuba, I blend in. But when I open my mouth, then they know my accent is not Cuban and it's not Panamanian.
Okay. So, if yes, are they only able to do so when you speak? You
mm-hmm.
just acknowledge that, or is it also the case when you don't? So,
I think it's more when I speak.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are there any other clues that you think they could pick up on? They're picking up on.
If I go in and order a couch from an expensive store, they know I'm not the average Panamanian. They're rich Panamanians here,
mm-hmm.
but they would probably. I remember I was trying to quickly call it up, but there was a surreal assumption when I went into a store. And the assumption was based on the fact that I was American.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
May I ask a question? So, is there a wealthy black Panamanian community?
I think so. I think there are wealthy black Panamanians.
So that's one of you were talking about class and race all intersecting.
They all do.
Especially in the white culture.
But I think, yeah, I think there are rich Panamanian Antillians here.
Have you interacted with foreign immigrants in the U.S.?
Yes, in my work all the time.
Okay.
I mean, and so one of the things I'll say about traveling, it made me much more empathic with students coming in who have left their country and how they're struggling to assimilate.
Okay. And what types of circumstances or settings, you already mentioned your work, can you tell me about one or two of these interactions and any additional circumstances or settings where you had an opportunity to interact with immigrants in the U.S.?
The sadness of some of the Asian students whose parents have made the sacrifice to move here and only want them in computer science.
Mm-hmm.
When they're much more artistic.
Mm-hmm.
Even there is sort of a difference in how, in psychoses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The students who were in humanities, if they were having a psychotic experience, it was more around existential kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what is my life? What's my purpose here? And unfortunately, we have suicide where this young woman slit her throat.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas some of the students from Asia, it was more like, my bed is wired. They're stealing my brain. Mm-hmm. A real difference there. And also, the need to save face. You know, like, I think there was a young man, I thought he was, I still think maybe that, I think that was an eating disorder.
Yeah.
But as I got more information about him, his eating disorder was the fact that his folks didn't have any money for the food. So that kind of interaction.
Are there any specifically with Latino, African, or Caribbean immigrants? Any interactions with those groups?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, on the university campus, you interact with all of those groups.
Okay. What qualities do you generally associate with Latino immigrants?
Different concept of time.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing our time.
Mm-hmm.
Different concept of time. I think probably reasonably verbal.
Mm-hmm.
And a high tolerance for gaudy.
What about African immigrants?
Strivers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, strivers. I mean, striving. Love some of the accents. That precise accent. But the sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
The sacrifice. I think sacrifices with every immigrant family, there's a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the African student, I mean, it's in the air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're here to get it done.
Okay. What about Caribbean immigrants?
I'm probably lumping Caribbean immigrants with Latino. So let me see if I can, again, I'm thinking of maybe just one in particular, but again, the striving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. What do your family members think or say about these populations, and can you remember a particular conversation with them about immigrants?
Well, you know, like I said, because of my age, the United States wasn't, I didn't feel like the United States was having an influx of immigrants in the way it is now, and if they were, they were white.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in the school that I went to, mm-hmm. The immigrants were Polish, the mm-hmm. Polish kid that had been displaced.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember a lot of other immigrants coming in, and I think because they were white, their acceptance
mm-hmm.
was a lot different than, you know, if they had been Latino. I have a thought, but I think I've lost it, so I'm not able to get back to it quickly. My father was more strident about welfare. I mean, he would just go off on welfare. So I don't think that was linked to immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there particular immigration laws or policies that come to mind when you think of immigration in the U.S.?
Again, that difference, you know, not admitting Haitians,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, people from Eastern Europe coming. I guess, again, it's the color,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people get in because they happen to be a certain color, and other people don't get in because they happen to be a certain color.
Are you concerned about the impact of too much immigration? What do you think U.S. policy should be?
I tried to think about this. You know, I don't know if I can answer it directly, but we've created the situation
mm-hmm.
because we have gone around the world wanting people to think that if you can just get to the U.S., the streets are going to be paved
mm-hmm.
with gold. Mm-hmm. You can have anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're faced with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this myth.
Mm-hmm.
That we have given to people, the almighty dollar. If
mm-hmm.
you know, you can do anything you want to as long as you have the almighty dollar. So, I don't get the feeling that we are willing to admit that we have brought this on.
Mm-hmm.
We have created this. We have, the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Give me your poor, you're tired, you're weak. We don't want your poor, you're tired, you're weak. That, I mean, that is a big... and I'm not sure we are at the point where we really want to talk about what we have created. I think we have to be able to talk about that first before we can then come up with some policy
mm-hmm.
about how we're going to handle it. You know, of course, the other stuff that goes on. Of course, if you're coming into this country and you have to survive, and politically it's been set up because, you know, we again, like I said, part of the world, we've created these political situations where people can't go back to their countries because their lives are in danger. So of course they have to stay here, and they're willing to work for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there are people, I think maybe also maybe primarily African American people who've been here all their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not willing, and I can't tell you back then, they're not willing to work for 50 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe somebody coming in from Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
From the, what's the Rouge?
Khmer Rouge?
I'll work for 50 cents because I can't go back
mm-hmm.
Anyplace else. So, and of course people are terrified that, you know, there isn't going to be enough to go around. I think maybe a while back, maybe I was, but, you know, we are running out of resources. So how do we allocate those? And then I just, you know, somebody sent me a blurb the other day about Cindy McCain, and she's wearing a $5,000 for Saint Laurent suit
mm-hmm.
and a 3-strand necklace of pearls. And there's somebody else working for 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
How would you characterize relations between African Americans and immigrant communities, especially those groups we focus on, Latino, Caribbean, and African? In your home city, if that's something that you're in touch with.
I kind of touched on it maybe mm-hmm. a little bit by saying angry that other people are working for less,
mm-hmm.
willing to work for less,
mm-hmm.
And be paid less, and, you know, not having jobs.
Mm-hmm.
finally what I have more to say about that. But yeah, I think there's a lot of mistrust and you know, dislike and fearful and about whether or not there are enough resources to go around.
Okay.
I still think they are. I just think they're allocated lopsided.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of education that needs to be done about resources. This is just a little tangent, but I think it's, I don't know whether he's the treasurer of the United States, but his last name is Walker, and I read a couple, maybe a year ago, that regardless of who's nominated, one of the things he wanted to do as this camp, as this election is going on, is to go around the country and explain to Americans what kind of debt we're in, and how that debt has gotten accrued. And I think I would hope that he would continue, that he would really do that, so that we can understand what has happened that she gets to wear a $5,000 suit and somebody else is struggling to live. How, you know, how has resources been allocated? Who gets all those big tax cuts, and how do they look on paper as compared to when you send in your income tax, how it looks, you know?
We're wrapping up. Just a few more questions.
Okay.
Are you involved with any community groups or organization in your home city? If so, what roles do you play with the group?
I have not been a big organization person. I belong to a professional organization. I continue that. I have participated in the demonstrations against the war, but I feel like my contribution has come through my work, the individual work that I've done. And in some ways, I feel like I don't have to do anything else, because I feel like I sit with people when they're in their pain and try and help them work through that so that they can make use of that potential. That's where I feel. That's where I feel. That's my community. That's been my community work.
Yeah. Okay. What specific message do you want to communicate to the younger people of the community? Any generation behind you, about the world beyond the U.S.
Do not be afraid of other people, and do not allow yourself to be talked into an ideology that says it's okay to kill people because they may eat Mecca, because they bow to Mecca to pray, or because they, you know, on Fridays it's the synagogue or whatever, that you not get lulled in to that. And that the most important thing is self-esteem, that you're proud to be who you are, they're proud to be who they are. And one of the things I take issue with on Hillary Clinton is that, going to what I'm talking about, we will be the best country in the world. You know, that's insulting to other people. I think there's a very different way to phrase that. Let us try to be the best we can. Not that we're the best country in the world, but the best that we can be, and that includes everybody.
What do you think it would take to get more U.S. African American youth interested in the world beyond the United States?
I think there are probably a lot of them that are interested. I think of some of my friends and the opportunity and stimulation they have given their kids. I think if everything is going well, he should be on a trip right now to Egypt, with a group of other teenagers. But sometimes I guess the media, again, I sort of feel like, maybe again, I'm paranoid, but I feel like it's kind of insidious. That sometimes a lot doesn't, in the news anyway, a lot doesn't get focused on accomplishment. What gets focused on is the killing each other and dopers.
Absolutely.
Whether or not the media will ever, will do anything to influence the media about that, I don't know. But I think there is a lot. I think there's a lot of, my friends and their kids, I get a newsletter from Michelle, and she says, "Well, Lisa is now an attorney for for such and such." So I know it's happening. It just doesn't get in the forefront as much. Yeah. And here you guys are.
Is there any other information you want to include that we haven't touched upon?
I think you've touched on a lot. I've enjoyed talking about it. Because as you get older, you begin to reminisce. Or at least I want to speak for myself. As I get older, I begin to reminisce and think about the experiences and think, okay, I expect to be around another 30 years, at least I hope so. What am I going to do in these next 30 years? So if you have any volunteer work, I'm happy to do it.
I'm sure we can accommodate.
No, I don't. I think your questionnaire is very, is the right word. I think it elicits a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, as I was thinking about it, if there was anything in particular I wanted to say today, I think I have pretty much said it. Except for the fact that I feel like moving out of the U.S. has redeemed my spirit. I think I'm less angry. I had to get out. I could see myself getting more and more depressed. So getting out has really enhanced my spirit. Mm-hmm. So now I can think about, oh yeah, what do I want to do? So I'm feeling more alive.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for participating.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
It's been a pleasure to listen. It really has. And please contact us if there's anything else you want to add, if you have any more questions, or you come up with any wonderful way that you can contribute, and we will certainly look for an opportunity to take care of that volunteer energy.
Well, let me just put it out now. You know, if there's anything I can do to volunteer, you know, if here, my Spanish is not real great.
Mm-hmm.
I can say more than I comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anything I can do, I will be back in the United States in January. So again, if there's anything, any questions you need answered about Oakland,
because mm-hmm.
that's where I live, Oakland, Berkeley, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, just call.
Okay.
Let's see, I should give you a cell phone number.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm going to stop recording now.
Sure.